Making personal Bible study count. The challenge is for all of us, but the challenge for me is as I look out and see who is in the audience, is there some people here who have been probably just begun wanting to study the Bible, understanding what does that mean? There's some that have been studying the Bible longer than I have. So what we have to do is boil it down to some basic principles. And so we're going to start at the very beginning, and then we're going to work our way up. And if at some point you get confused, which with my teaching is highly likely, that's okay. You raise your hand. Okay, it's going to be more class-like, just without the complete chaos that can happen sometimes. So I've got a good group here. We're not going to have that problem. But I do want to ask you the question as we begin, have you then ever wanted to study the Bible and understand the Bible better, but just not known where to begin? That actually is usually where most people are at some point. And they come, and a lot of times that's why people go to school. Go to a school such as Southwest, want to know, how can I study the Bible? The challenge, though, is you're being taught the Bible, but you're not necessarily in it yourself. You know, the thing for a preacher is everything changes at graduation when you get up on Monday morning, and all of a sudden, all that learning you've taken place, you've got to do it all yourself. See, that's very different. It's very different to pick up a Bible and study it out yourself than to come and sit in a Bible class. It's very different than listening to a sermon. It's very different than having it directed for you or just given advice along the way, just to where do I start? And that actually is what we need to consider. Because otherwise we open up our Bibles, and this is how we think about Bible study. And if you've ever done this, you don't have to admit it, but you think, you know, I need to study my Bible more. And so it'll take a long time just to figure out where to even start. So that maybe we'll start at Genesis. That's the beginning. It's a very good place to start. I did that for Andy Baker because he was singing up here earlier. I'm not going to mention ice cream because now B.J. Clark and Andy Baker have already mentioned ice cream. And now I'm just hungry. But if you go back and you just pick it up, you could start anywhere. And you're going to get confused pretty quickly because it's going to be overwhelming. It's tiny type. It's a whole book. Where do I even start that process? And that's where there needs to be some direction given and as we try to figure this out. But I want us to take this back even a step before that and think about what, if you're going to study the Bible, and I'm assuming because you're interested, you're here, that you do have some interest in Bible study, I want to start with some basic suggestions, and if you need clarification, then let's go from there. But the first suggestion is, you want to study the Bible, make the time. You cannot study the Bible, and you cannot begin personal Bible study until you commit time to study the Bible. You just can never get there. Because what happens instead is that we kind of take a few pieces here and there, and I turn my personal Bible reading and that study, or I go over and I get a few bits and pieces here and there, and I'm just supplementing it with maybe my reading of books. And that's not the same as Bible study. You have to make the time. That's part of redeeming the time, Ephesians chapter 5 or 16. But how do we go about that? Well, you have to look at your own schedule and figure it out. And that means you have to be self-aware. How do I use my time right now? That tells you how you need to change it. You need to know what time do I have available? Truly, truly available. For example, I have work time. I have time I'm in the car. I have to sleep at some point. But everything else ought to be on the table as possible time. How I'm using my time. But when do I have that time available? If you work shift work, it's going to be a different time. You also need to know yourself. Say, what time do I think the best? Some people are really great morning people. I think there were probably people in the parking lot just waiting for the building to open this morning. Because they're morning people. And so their minds are alert. The moment they wake up, they're ready to go. Give me something to think about. There are other people that, shall we say, are not at all like that. But they have trouble. They are awake late, and they just really pick things up late. And you need to know if that's who you are. Sometimes it's the middle of the day. That's your high point. Know when you think best. But there's another part of this as well. What time will you use the most consistently? Because you have to have a regular routine of time to study if you're going to study consistently. You need to put that in there and make sure it happens. So make sure you make the time by understanding yourself what will be the best time, and then you set aside the time. Now, how long that is will depend on a lot of things. You may not have an hour to give every day. I'm going to tell you that's okay. If you have 30 minutes to give and set aside, then set aside 30 minutes. If you are in a house full of, shall we say, smaller than normal people that tend to absorb much time, you may not have as much time to study, but you need to set aside 15 to 30 minutes to study. Make sure, and then you can expand that out as they grow, but set aside the time. The next thing you need, though, that we often don't think about is you need to find or create a studious environment. What encourages study? And I used to think I knew the answer to this back years ago when I was much smarter. I knew all those answers. But I found it changes over time. And I also thought that as I got older, I thought, you know, sitting in my recliner sounds really good. Prop up, have my laptop out. I found out that sounds great, but it's not necessarily the greatest thing to do because of these reasons. You need to find a place that's comfortable for study, not for resting. And that means you need to find a place where you are sitting up, feet on the floor. You're going to think I'm crazy, but why this would matter. It's better for your blood flow, which helps the way you think. This is one of the reasons why standing desks have become more popular, because it encourages those kind of things. But you need to be where you're studying. It needs to be ergonomically sound. If you're sitting down in your recliner with a lap desk on, which sounds great, you know, I guess I'm an old man, because that'll throw my hip out. Just doing that for very long. You need natural light. Okay, natural light. But you need to find a place that you can use consistently. Same thing, be consistent in it. Find that place, and find a place that encourages concentration and limits interruptions. Now, I'm going to give you those principles without telling you, go find an island somewhere. Because what is an interruption to one person is not an interruption to another. What encourages concentration is different for someone else. So I'm going to give you a couple examples now. I currently, in my office, I have absolutely no natural light coming into my office. Now, that falls under the realm of a little bit depressing. And it doesn't necessarily help you think all the time. So I like to get out of the office to get light. And I started years ago, one of my favorite places to go and I would study. Two places, Dairy Queen and Chick-fil-A, highly recommended. Because of this, for me, that becomes white noise, and I was less likely to be interrupted than I would by odd things just kind of happening when I was at the office. Okay, so it really determines how you interpret that. You need to find that time, now again, of when children are not going to be interrupting you all the time. You see, all these things have to be taken into account. But all of this is essential because when you're in the middle of a really good thought and you're interrupted, it takes a lot of effort to get back to that. Preachers, do y'all know what I'm talking about here? You get that interruption and you are really in a flow and it just stops. So find it where you can keep that from happening at intervals of about 20 to 30 minutes. Okay, because you need a break will be good. Now, thirdly, you need to think about the purpose of your study. What are you trying to accomplish? You go back to 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 15, we have the broad purpose. Study or give diligence to show yourself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. You're there to try to please God, but now you need to hone that down to what am I trying to get out of this particular lesson, out of this particular text, or why am I studying in the first place? Now, if you just start off, you're thinking, I just want to learn something. I just want to know what God's will is, and that's fine. But when you start, you do need to have some personal goals, and that's why what Andy just finished talking about is really good. Know some things you need to grow in. If you're just beginning, start with Bible study that is personal and specific, something you already have a natural interest in. Now, with this caveat, every high school class I've ever taught, and you ask, what would you like to study? And the answer is the book of Revelation. That is correct. Okay, I'm just going to have a basic way to try to explain this. Don't. Okay? Bad idea, right? Why? You need to start with simple things. Develop a process where you can understand. You work up to things. You don't go onto that gym, as Andy was saying, and pick up the heaviest weights and try to lift it. That's a bad idea. You go and you start with the bar. And the bar is not Revelation. You need to say something that's far more straightforward where you are right now. But also that's of interest to you. Why am I doing this? So think about what you most need to learn, because that's going to affect how you begin. If you need to gain just familiarity with the Bible as a whole, because a lot of people, that's where they start. They didn't have a background growing up. Well, besides a reading program of the Bible, then you want to kind of get something that will encourage you to see the big picture. And that's going to be a specialized reading program more than often than not. A background in the history, a reading of through probably Mark as the shortest gospel, and Acts. And then you'd probably pick one epistle to give you a straight, something like Ephesians, to give you a grounding. Not too much hard material that's too confusing, and you can move through that way. Okay, so Genesis, Exodus is a good place to start, and then you can kind of get a view of Matthew or Mark, Acts, and then an epistle. If, on the other hand, you want to start and look at each book in general, or the scheme of redemption, you're going to approach it a different way. If you go through and we think about really studying the Bible, I automatically think about studying the book, studying it text, verse by verse. Then you have to choose and know what you're trying to study and why. Now, this is going to impact you the most long term, and that's why you need to want to do this. But if you're studying, you're starting a textual study, where do I start? Start with things that are practical, not heavily doctrinal. Because you need to start learning how to make application. And it's going to be simpler. The best place I always tell people to begin is the book of James. Because while there are some problem passages, some difficult places in that, a lot of it is pretty straightforward. And you can understand and grow into the process as a whole going through that book without having too many landmines you might run into. But if you're going through and you're going to study and take a text, pace yourself. You know what happens a lot of times when we're studying? We get frustrated with ourselves because I want to get done. Instead of, I want to learn just this bit. And when you're trying to learn in 15-minute increments, it's no wonder that you'd get frustrated that I'm never going to finish. I've got news for you. You are never going to finish. So don't be worried about that. Your job in studying is to learn what you can in the time allotted that you can take that will grow you to be closer to God, that you can apply to be a better Christian at whatever pace you can go that best gets you there. That's where you get rid of the comparisons. You're just trying to learn. Okay. In James, you would start off, and honestly, if you've got a basic beginning study, there is enough in verses 1 through 4 for your first study to take care of it. There just is. That's plenty. If you're really wanting to learn it, that's all right. Now, there are different ways to do that, and you say, well, that's not very much. Well, you can go through verse 12 for the first section, but you don't have to. Don't put unnecessary pressure on yourself to perform at certain amounts. Your job is to learn. Okay, so please take that to heart. You cannot learn everything quickly. So you want to learn what will make a significant impact moving forward in your life, and then take that practically speaking to the next level after you finish this book. Now what do I go on to? What will help me the most? And that brings us then, fourthly, to studying with focus. Focus is a principle that you find somewhat, say, in Matthew 6, verse 33. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Focus. There are some things that are more important than other things. And we ought to recognize that and approach what we're doing like that. And now I'm going to say something that most people don't like to hear. Multitasking may be all the rage, but it is a poor habit for Bible study. We like to, I can do so many things at once. I played that game. What they found is you can do several things at once, just none of them well. If you want to study the Bible and do it well, then study the Bible. And that's why I say you need to have committed time. That this is what I'm going to do. What does it take to have that kind of commitment when it's hard? You have to really want it. And that want, that drive, is what gives you focus. And you can do it. So you take that 15 minutes, even if it's in, if you say, I've got longer than that, then take it in increments. That's going to produce, if it's really focused, though, far better results. When you look at it as a whole, and here's what I'm trying to produce, and I'm moving through it. So if I just go through, and we're going to go into the specifics of this in just a moment about the task, we can accomplish a lot more with that in mind. So here's how you go about it. Okay, this is fifth, but we're getting to the text. Build the big picture first. All right? Build the big picture first. When Jesus comes on the scene to teach, he offers a big picture view of what life should be like and how it should be lived in the Sermon on the Mount. He is slowly getting them up to what they really need to know. He doesn't lay out his mission and everything first. He waits until they're ready for it. When you get to Matthew 16, and he is asking them to see what their understanding is of him, and Peter then confesses, now we can move on and talk about, here's what the real mission is. But he had to build that big picture first. And that's true when you approach a text. What is the book of James about? Anyone have an idea about what we call the book of James? Wisdom book? Proverbs? Okay, a New Testament Christian manual. It's extremely practical. What makes it practical? Directives about what? It tells you, here's what you can do. But what is it telling you about? Faith working through love, but what specifically, we have all these issues. That's not where it starts, is it? It starts with problems. And you actually have a series of problems presented. The heart, if you look at James, it starts, the first chapter is all about overcoming temptation. That's your biggest problem. That's why I say it's the most practical. What do you deal with temptation? That's a problem. Then he presents big picture temptations. The temptation to show partiality. Stop it. Now, that's the directive part, right? Stop it. The temptation to believe but not do. Stop it. The temptation to vie for and get in this kind of verbal combat over a place, a slot teaching. That's really what chapter 3 is about, going into chapter 4 that ends up with division. Stop it. The problem of focusing on worldly things, into chapter 4. Stop it. The idea of thinking that you're better than others or getting this rivalry over social things. Stop it. And then he comes back at the end, and he is actually returning to all those problems. What happens when I fail? And so the end of the book is dealing with the failure to overcome the temptation, and that is when you are confessing sins, calling for the elders, and working to restore people. Okay? Now, so you're dealing with problems. Now, you can go and you... Now you've got the big picture. Now when I go back, you say, "What? Well, that's easy because I just told you the big picture." How do you get the big picture? What do you have to do? Thank you. You read it. Matter of fact, you read it more than once. And you're looking just to see flow of the book. And that's where you really need to start. Get that flow of it. Because that's going to provide this framework. One of my favorite books to read, when I'm reading through the Bible, it happens every year, is Isaiah. Now that's a long book to read. You've got 66 chapters. That can take a while. But especially once I hit it, it's when you're going through all that judgment stuff, right in the middle, that's kind of rough. You know, early on, we're getting a piece of this, of what's going on, and then there's hope of Messiah. And there's this, and there's this hope of what's going on. And then you come back and you said, and there's hope, and there's judgment, but there's hope, and there's judgment. And then you come and you pass chapter 39, and I tell you what, when I hit chapter 40 of Isaiah, I just pretty much can't stop. Because it's hope, 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 hope. What do we see? We see the general flow of a book. Of, there's a problem, come let us reason together. We got issues. I'm going to help you take care of these issues. I'm sending the Messiah. But I judge these kind of issues, so you'd better get ready. Here is my plan, and now we have Christ in the church. So that big picture idea, now when I go through, I'm looking for things that fit into that. Because I've stopped to think about them and have big picture. Why is that necessary? Anybody ever started reading the book of Ecclesiastes and stopped before you got to the end? If ever there was a reason to read a book all the way through, the book of Ecclesiastes is the book. Because you can't understand the rest of it till you get to the end. I mean, if we start vanity of vanities, all is vanities, and we just stop there, then we just become philosophers. Don't become godly. So how do we get there? Once we go through and read the book as a whole, what's our next step? Most important step outside of basic analysis is this. Ask questions. Ask lots and lots of questions. Matthew 16, verse 16, probably the most famous question when Jesus asked the disciples, "Whom do men say that I am?" And then he says, "Whom do you say?" Okay. But Jesus was always asking questions. It's because it stimulates thought. And you need to be, as a Bible student, the one who stimulates your own thought as you approach the text. So you begin with basic questions. Just lay them out and follow it. It's okay. You learned these growing up. Who, what, when, where. Right? Lay them out and ask them when you approach the text. That's your basic information of pulling it out of the text to make sure that I know what's going on. Now, who, you think, well, that's pretty obvious. No, it's not. Ask that question. Ask who every time you come across a pronoun. Because that really makes a difference in your understanding sometimes. Who? You identify so you know each time who is doing the acting, what they're doing, where it's happening, what is the scene that's going on, or the situation. Where is this and when? That's background. We'll get to that more in a moment. But here's the thing. Ask a question. Anything you don't understand. And I actually encourage you to ask questions you do understand anyway, starting off. Start the ball rolling. You just start asking, why is this here? Why? Who is this? I don't know who this person is. You don't have to answer them right away. Just ask the questions. Because this is laying out a form for you to come back and investigate. Bible study is about investigating a text. Coming up with answers, but if you don't ever ask the questions, you have nothing to investigate. That's why you start with the questions. But then once you've got all the information laid out with these basic questions, now we get to the real questions for Bible study. The real questions are, why? That is to help you understand the purpose of that information. why? And the principle that underlies it. You ask why. And then you ask how. That's for application. How do I do this? Now, go back to John 13 now real quickly. In John 13, Jesus is taking the disciples. He's gathered them together. Going to celebrate the Passover. And he's going to have essentially what's amount to laying out his vision for the future that they do not realize is going to be without him on earth. But the first thing he does is wash their feet. After they'd all come in, nobody had done this, there was a need, wash your feet. And then he gets up and asks them if they understand what he's done. That is the equivalent of asking why of a text. Do you get the point? What is the point? Why is this here? Why does this matter? And then you go through and you say, well, if you just ask what, then you say, what did Jesus do? He washed feet. Okay, where was he? He was in that room. Who was with him? The disciples. And now you've accomplished all the things you already accomplished by reading the text. But when you ask why did he do this? Well, it was to teach them something. What was it to teach them? It leads you on a line. You keep asking the questions. Well, what was he teaching? He was teaching them humility. He was teaching them you're not better than anybody else. He was teaching them service. Now you ask how. And more specifically, say, how do I do this today? Now I'm going to start the process of applying the text. Now we have to analyze this. We're going to get now the next level. After we've asked our questions, we've begun that layer of Bible study. Now we need to get down to real hardcore analysis. Okay? And it can be as hardcore as you want at this point. That's going to depend upon your own growth. Nehemiah 8, verse 8, you have an example of where Ezra was stood above the people and he read in the book of the law distinctly, right? And depend upon your translation of what he was fully doing here, but he took over the text, he would really interpret, he would translate it, and then give the meaning. And that's what you're trying to do in Bible study when you do analysis, essentially. First thing you have to do if you're analyzing, you analyze the words. Now, you don't have to be someone that's great in the languages of Greek and Hebrew to do this, especially with modern Bible software. You need to be careful about using that, but you've got a lot of things available to you. But even just pay attention to the words, even in English, that are used there, and the precise words. And when you check and say, this word matters, why does he use this? So you're analyzing the meaning of the word. So if you don't know the meaning of a word, you need to look it up. Now, here's the other thing, though. You ever been reading a book and you just, it's got some words that, you know, I can understand what's being said here, you don't go and run and pick up a dictionary, do you? When y'all are reading Pride and Prejudice, you don't look up all the words that are used. Apparently no one here has read Pride and Prejudice. You have an assignment when you leave. No. But you go home and you look at those words because in context it fits. You know how many times we're doing the Bible and we're reading the Bible? We understand the general flow and we think we know what that word means in context, but we really couldn't define it if we were asked. In Bible study, you take the trouble of figuring out exactly what that word means. Because understanding those words is what gives you a deeper meaning to what is being said. And you start with the meaning of words. You then apply grammar. And you start by identifying the main subject and the main verb. There's your focus. Everything else revolves around that. And sometimes with Paul, that can get pretty interesting. That you need to make sure. For example, when you go to Colossians 2, verses 6 and 7, this is a simple one. As you have therefore received Christ Jesus the Lord, so walk ye him, rooted and built up in him, established in the faith as you have been taught, abounding therein with thanksgiving. Even when I quote that, it's interesting because I tend to emphasize all the parts except for the main verb. As you therefore receive Christ Jesus Lord. That's not the main part. Rooted and built up in Him, established in the faith, as you've been taught, abounding therein with thanksgiving. Those are all participles. The main verb is simply, so walk ye. Walk ye. Walk is the main verb. Ye, you, is the main subject. And everything else is revolving around that, is that your behavior. Now you have to understand what walk means, and you have to understand how it is used as a metaphor in the New Testament. That's pretty clear, but you need to get that as the emphasis, because what happens a lot of times, it's amazing, one of our greatest problems we have today is when in Bible study, we take something that is a kind of a sideline idea thrown out there. This is kind of interesting, and it becomes our main idea for everything else that follows, instead of letting the writer inspired tells us what the main idea is. Okay? So keep it that main idea there. When studying any text of Scripture, then, consider the following as a general guide. Here we're going to go with our questions now. You need to look and say, what is the overall point of the section? Answer that question. Don't just do it based upon the first thing you read. Read the whole, and then once you say, well, this is the major point, go back and run and test yourself. How does this fit into my main point that I just said? How does this next verse fit into the main point? Make sure you're being consistent with it. How does it fit in with the overall context of the book? You're defining and clarifying the words that you're using then. And be aware of the word choices when they switch up. When there are certain words are chosen rather than others, that really matters. You're identifying people and places. And you look at what situation was happening for people when this was written and how that text relates. You then go and check. If there's a quotation or an allusion to Scripture elsewhere, go and check it. And then in your analysis, once you've done that big view of doing just a section then, break it down into phrases. And what I would recommend is take the Bible, paste it into some kind of text editor, and then doing about a 5-space difference between them, and then just doing it phrase by a time, one phrase at a time, and leaving just a phrase on a line is going to give you a lot of pages. Then go back and identify all those words and see what does this phrase mean. Write it down in the spot. And you do that with every phrase. Now, as you go through it, highlighting words and grammar, but then you go through and see how does all what I wrote down phrase by phrase, if I just read what I wrote, what is the flow? What is the overall meaning? And as a basic way of coming to a greater understanding, but keeping you from just moving ahead, but keeping you focused on putting it together as a unit and recognizing each little part and its contribution, that's really important. You need to then spend time talking about the text and all the information that your study has produced out loud to yourself. Okay, you can just think about it if you want. But meditate upon it. Meaning. Because this is where application comes in. A lot of times we go straight from kind of paper to press, and we don't spend enough time really thinking about it. And throughout this process, take notes. How much time do I have? Are we done? I was going to give them an example. I'm sorry. I poor use of time. I'm sorry. That was just how it goes. But I will get out of the way. I try to give you the from very beginning to ultimate at the end. And depending upon where you are in your study, I hope you found something of value there that you can use in the future. If not, then come talk to me and I'll help you from there. And other than that, you just blame Cody. And I'm not going to do that because I appreciate the opportunity to be here. Thank you, Cody, for the invitation. Thank you, elders, for the opportunity. And thank you all for your attention.